Okay, next case is number 2011-1397, Sanofi Aventis against Genentech. Mr. Salander.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. In construing the claims in this case, the District Court made errors falling into two categories. First, the District Court added limitations to the claims where those limitations were not compelled either by the specification or the prosecution history. Second, the District Court construed the terms of the pending claims in a way that is inconsistent with the specification where there was no justification in doing so. And last, the Court erred in granting summary judgment of non-infringement with respect to two terms, with respect to two of the terms of the case by improperly resolving factual issues against the non-movement. Your Honors, if I could begin this morning with the 140 patent, which is the plasmid patent, if you will. The District Court erred in construing the term recombinant DNA plasmid to require that the plasmid be circular and extra chromosomal.
But the only plasmids in the specification were circular, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. The plasmids that were in the specification were circular, except when they were being cut and added to and then recircularized. There is no reason or in the specification or the prosecution history that compelled adding the two limitations to the word plasmid. In coming to that conclusion, the District Court relied primarily, if not only, on the Stinsky patent. And the Stinsky patent, while cited and discussed during the prosecution, the term plasmid was never at issue. In the years and years of back and forth over the Stinsky patent.
The plasmid term plasmid doesn't appear in the patent either, does it?
No, Your Honor. Those claims were copied from the Stinsky patent, and that's where the term first appeared. Yes. The Stinsky patent, Your Honor, is not prior art, although that is a disputed issue that will be decided in the future below. The applicants never adopted the definition of plasmid that is given in the Stinsky patent, and for good reason. The Stinsky patent is the definition applies to a plasmid as it exists in bacteria. And the patentees in this particular case were claiming a plasmid is used in a eukaryotic expression system. By 1983, the definition of plasmid from its origin in a bacteria cell had grown to encompass plasmids that are used in eukaryotic expression systems where they can be both linearized and integrated into the chromosome of the cell.
Didn't you originally propose a construction to be an autonomous DNA molecule containing DNA from two or more sources? Wasn't that your proposed claim construction?
It was originally proposed. It was abandoned at the Markman hearing, Your Honor. There was a change of counsel based on a disqualification motion.
Wouldn't the autonomous portion of that proposal indicate that the plasma is extra chromosomal?
No, Your Honor. I think what was intended by autonomous in that case was that the replication of the plasmid occurred by using the cellular machinery. So whether it was integrated into the chromosome of the cell or whether there existed extra chromosomally, the plasmid doesn't replicate by itself. It needs the cellular machinery in order to do it. For example, a plasmid is still a plasmid if it's in a test tube, and there it doesn't replicate at all. So it's capable of being replicated, and that is true whether it's extra chromosomal or whether it's integrated into the chromosome. At the hearing, Your Honor, we submitted evidence that the art recognized the term plasmid when it's used as a integrated in linear form in even bacteria. So by the time of 1983 and 1984, when this patent was filed, the art had recognized that plasmids can be used as linear and integrated forms, and they're still called plasmids.
Let me ask you about the 522 patent, the inserting step. First of all, didn't that occur before the patent was granted?
No, Your Honor. It occurs every single day that Genentech manufactures this product.
That's not really inserting. That's mitosis, isn't it?
Your Honor, mitosis is a form of inserting. The parties agreed on the question of inserting that it means putting or introducing into. And in our view, it should have ended there, and the jury should have been able to decide whether...
But that takes an actor to introduce, doesn't it?
Absolutely, and there are actors at Genentech that cause the introduction, Your Honor. It is really no different in setting up a vat of cells, if you will, and putting in the right kind of chemicals to ensure that the foreign DNA, which is what Genentech calls it in its BLA, the foreign DNA, is put in every single daughter cell. If they did not control the conditions precisely, including putting toxins in there that ensure that the foreign DNA is propagated.
Isn't the DNA from the daughter cells already inside the parent cell before it divides?
No, Your Honor. What happens in the parent cell is that the two chromosomes are copied, and then the chromosomes are put into two daughter cells. So you wind up with two cells. If that's what you mean, yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
That's what happens.
All right.
Yes, we have diagrams of that in the record.
And I don't see how that corresponds to what the ordinary meaning of inserting is. I'm just not understanding what you're saying.
Well, Your Honor, the you start with one cell that has the DNA, and you wind up with two. The foreign DNA had to get into the other cell in some way. And our argument is that the foreign DNA gets into the daughter cell by the process of mitosis. So it's
correct.
Put there by mitosis.
Well, it's the process of mitosis.
All right.
I follow you so far.
Okay.
So how is that inserting?
It's putting the DNA into a foreign cell. I think what Your Honor is making the same error, I believe, that the district court made respectively. And that is that inserting requires going across the cellular membrane. And that is a limitation that is not required anywhere by the prosecution or the specification. You're limiting inserting only to going across a cellular membrane, which is one way of inserting. But another way of inserting is to put the DNA into the daughter cells through the process of mitosis, which is caused, and they say growing them under pressure, by toxins and other things that Genentech includes in the reaction medium to cause the daughter cells to contain the foreign DNA. If they didn't do that, the daughter cells would lose the foreign DNA over time.
Let me ask you about an isolated enhancer. You, the applicant, that is, argued during prosecution that neither of the primary references teaches the preparation of an isolated enhancer region as defined by the pending claims. And don't the two references, John and Thompson, disclose the enhancer combined with the promoter?
Your Honor,
the argument distinguishes and defines what an isolated enhancer is?
Your Honor, those arguments pertain to product claims that were pending at the time. The argument from the examiner was we were trying to claim a piece of DNA that was already known. And we were trying to do that based on a new use. And as you know, you cannot claim an old compound based on a new use, the compound itself. So those on pages 20 and 21.
The argument relates to the meaning of isolated enhancer.
As defined in the product claim. We were saying that we were only claiming as a product the enhancer as removed from the enhancer portion of the Thompson reference. Your Honor, those claims were expressly abandoned.
You're saying the term has a different meaning depending upon whether it's in a product claim or a method claim?
No, Your Honor. I'm saying that in the method claim, there's no limitation on how that enhancer can be used with respect to any DNA that might go along with it, so long as it comes from the upstream region of the gene. There was no disclaimer anywhere in the patent history as to a method of using this claim that would exclude using it with the native HCMV promoter. And so in our view, the court improperly looked to prosecution history disclaimers that relate only to the product claims and used them to construe a method claim in a way that is improper. So our view is we aren't claiming, as the court said and as Genentech says, the use of the enhancer and promoter. We're claiming the use of the enhancer, whether with the promoter or not. And, Your Honor, that's exactly what the specification says at the top of column 2. It says that you can use the enhancer with the promoter, or you can use the enhancer without the intrinsic promoter, which is the HCMV promoter. In the example of the patent, it shows the use of a enhancer with the inside the entire PST1M fragment, which includes not only the enhancer but the promoter and downstream DNA to stopping at just above the translation start site. So, Your Honor, the specification says to a person of ordinary skill in the art that this enhancer can be used with the native promoter and it can also be used with downstream DNA. There is no clear and unmistakable disavowal of any claim scope as to downstream DNA or using it with the enhancer, with the promoter. Your Honor, if I could just turn back briefly to the plasmid question. The way that the court used the Stinsky reference was, in effect, to bind the applicants to a definition that was found as part of a piece of cited prior art. Now, it is perfectly reasonable to look to the prior art that's cited during a prosecution if that prior art is discussed and if that prior art is distinguished, or just in general to see how the usage of the term is used in the prior art. As to the first two, it serves the notice function of telling the reader how the applicant viewed that term. If you're distinguishing that term because you've either adopted it as part of your specification, or if you have distinguished that term as part of the prior art and discussed it, that can tell you what the meaning of that term is, or at least as the applicant saw it. But that's the Kumar case. That's not what happened here. As I said, nothing about plasmid was discussed with respect to the Stinsky patent. So there's no reason that Stinsky should bind the applicants that the applicant should be bound by that. Otherwise, you'd have to finish and go through all of your cited prior art references and find definitions you disagreed with and disclaim them all. And I don't think that's what was intended. So in my view, the court found that the applicants were bound by the Stinsky definition in an improper way. As to the references that were submitted by both sides, they show that the art usages of 1984 of the word plasmid was both linear and integrated and circular and extra chromosomal, and there was no claim disavowal or disavowal of any claim scope, clear and unmistakable disavowal of any claim scope as part of the prosecution or the specification. Reserve the balance of my time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Salinger.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. What we have presently before the Court is a well-reasoned, careful opinion by a respected district court judge, which we submit should be affirmed. Having lost on Markman and on summary judgment below, what we're seeing in the appellate briefs from the appellant here is brand new arguments and new spins on older arguments that weren't presented properly to the district court below. For example, with respect to the 140 patent and the phrase recombinant DNA plasmid, as Your Honor has already noted, before the district court, Sanofi had proposed an entirely different proposed construction.
But there's a pro-
No, I was just going to say, never mind whether the arguments are new. Here this petitioner is faced with an adverse decision and is obliged to confront it.
Yes, Your Honor.
My point was going to be, I think there's something to be said for your friend's argument that there was a kind of an improper, at least an over-reliance on the Stansky under our decision in Kumar, right?
Well,
there might very well be another additional basis for coming to the same conclusion, but it seems to me there was a bit of an over-reliance on Stansky, right?
Well, Your Honors, to step back for a second on the issue of construction on the merits as to the recombinant DNA plasmid, let's start with the intrinsic evidence and the things that aren't disputed. It's not disputed that this phrase was copied from the Stinsky patent. We're not suggesting, Your Honors, that you don't look at the specification of the 140 patent as part of the claims construction analysis to construe this phrase, which was copied from Stinsky. And if you look at the specification, it's only two columns in the 140 patent, there is some discussion of plasmids by specific scientific name, and it's undisputed that that discussion exclusively is talking about circular extrachromosomal plasmids. So we have in the intrinsic specification of the 140 patent, the only examples used in the two-column specification are consistent with the district court's construction. And I would submit, because the two-column patent specification does not, beyond using those circular extrachromosomal plasmids, beyond that, does not have a written discussion of the phrase recombinant DNA plasmid, that is entirely appropriate to look at the Stinsky specification from which this was copied, and with respect to which was back and forth over a decade with the Patent Office with respect to what Stinsky discloses and doesn't disclose. It's appropriate to consult that specification as well under Kumar or several of the court's decisions that talk about cited art that's discussed in the prosecution history being intrinsic evidence. When you do that, you don't find a conflict between the specification in the 140 patent and the specification of the Stinsky patent. You see that the Stinsky patent provides even further corroboration that this is what we mean when we say, at that time, when we say recombinant DNA plasmid. And just to read from column 3, lines 1 through 19 in the Stinsky specification, it says, plasmid is the term applied to any autonomously replicating DNA unit which might be found in a microbial cell other than the genome of the host cell itself. A plasmid is not genetically linked to the chromosome of the host cell. Plasmid DNA exists as a double-stranded ring structure. And then it goes on to say, plasmid DNA exists as a closed ring. This is not inconsistent at all with the use of the plasmids by their scientific names in the 140 specification. It further corroborates and shows that throughout both specifications, this is the way that these people maybe extraordinary skill at the time back then, were using this phrase.
Tell us about isolated enhancer.
Yes, Your Honor.
And particularly why at the second paragraph of column 2 that they're not, what they used, why aren't they used together?
Well, Your Honor, the short answer is that three sentence paragraph in column 2 is not claimed in either method claim 1 or 2. And as Your Honors know, the specification doesn't change as the prosecution history continues and the claims are amended and refined. Here, it's absolutely necessary to look at the prosecution history, which is over a decade long, on a two-column specification to understand what's being claimed. And if you walk through the specification, you see, or excuse me, through the prosecution history, Your Honor, you see that the patentee started out in its original application in 1985 without any of these limitations. And there's repeated rejections based on the Thompson/Stinsky art throughout this 10-year period. And over time, the applicant chipped away at the claim language, which eventually became method claim 1 and 2, and, for example, added isolated DNA enhancer. Isolated was added. Now, in the appellate briefs, Your Honor, we're told by counsel for Sanofi that isolated was added solely because of 101 rejection. But if you look at the office action that rejected it, there was multiple grounds. 101 was one, and 103 under Thompson was another one. And if you look at the response to that office action, Your Honors, you will see that not only was in the remarks section, not only was 101 addressed, but in connection with isolated, the word isolated in the amendment, but also 103 rejections. So contrary to what Sanofi said, isolated was not added solely because of 101 rejection. And in fact, I'll just give you an example. In that very same response where they amended to add isolated, they stated that in response to the 103 rejection, that the Stinsky reference had not invented, quote, an isolated enhancer region as defined in the pending claims. And they repeated that very same statement. These were not cited in appellant's brief, to your honor, but they're the very same response they cite to a couple pages later. So this is at A806. And the next page, they repeat the same thing about the Yon reference, which is another 103 rejection. And they say, the Yon reference doesn't show an isolated enhancer. Then they go on. That's not enough for the patent office. Patent office rejects still. And they go on and they amend and they say they change comprising to consisting of. An isolated DNA enhancer consisting of. And still, the patent office says that's not enough. They claim Thompson didn't discover that it was an enhancer. The patent office then pointed to Stinsky and said, well, Stinsky expressly says in their specification they've disclosed an enhancer. And so even when they limited it to isolated and even when they said it's consisting it of, the patent office says you still don't get a patent. What was it that finally got them the patent? Was after the final office action, they amended again, and that's where they added the wherein clause in Claim 1, wherein the previously mentioned isolated enhancer is the only HDMV material. And it's only through that entire series of events of narrowing and isolating this claim over this prior art that they were able to finally get this very narrow patent claim. And so, sure, you can look back, Your Honor, at the specification, at the sort of ambiguous paragraph that they're pointing to, it's about three sentences long, and say, well, that kind of, if you read it a certain way, suggests that you could use the promoter. That's not claimed in Claim 1. Claim 1 expressly says isolated enhancer consisting of, and it's the only HDMV material. It can't be any clearer than that.
What about inserting?
I agree with, to the extent Your Honor's request, expressing skepticism on that. In my opinion, that doesn't pass the red face test. Mitosis is a natural process of cell division. It does not by any stretch of the imagination constitute taking foreign DNA and inserting it into the cell. And that's what this claim is all, that's what this claim is talking about. It's recombinant DNA. You're taking DNA from a plasmid and you're inserting it into another cell. It's not talking about mitosis. There's no evidence that's in any way credible that would raise any issue of fact as to that. What we've got there is a situation where we went through the claim construction process with inserting and said inserting should have its plain meaning, putting it into something, introducing it into something. And they said, we agree. And then they come back and make the implausible claim under the guise of a question of fact that mitosis meets that.
Does that issue take care of all of the issues with respect to the 522 patent?
Your Honor, there's three independent bases on which you could affirm, and that's one of them. So if you affirm on inserting...
That doesn't take care of the 140.
Doesn't take care of the 140, but that takes care of the 522. There's the inserting reason, which we just talked about. Also, isolated DNA enhancer. If Your Honor finds that means the enhancer and not other parts of the regulatory DNA there, such as the promoter or other regulatory sequences, it's undisputed that the accused products don't have just the enhancer. So that would resolve 532. And finally, the upstream region of the IE gene, which we haven't had much discussion about. There's a dispute as to whether that the transcription starts upstream is relative to something. What is it relative to? And the dispute below was whether it was relative to the transcription start site or the translation start site. This is another easy one. The patent clearly is talking about, when it's talking about the positions of the nucleotides, it's talking about relative to the transcription start site, which of course makes total sense because we're talking about an enhancer, and an enhancer is only relevant to the process of transcription. That's all it's relevant to. It has nothing to do with translation. And so when you're talking about where it's located relative to a site, you're talking about relative to the transcription start site, which you see throughout the specification, every single place. When it talks about isolating C2 and C4, it gives their positions relative to what? To the transcription start site. Both figures in the go with the two-column patent talk about talk about where they found C2 and C4, and they express it relative to the +1 transcription start site in one figure and the cap site, which is the same thing as a transcription site in the other figure. Nowhere in the disclosure is there any mention of a translation start site. It's not even disclosed. And in fact, there's over 650 nucleotides that would go down to the point where they say you could have enhancer activity from the translation start site that aren't even disclosed in the specification. We don't even know what those nucleotides are. They were not discovered. In fact, the inventors testified with respect to those nucleotide sequences that they observed no enhancer activity. So clearly...
Let's go back to
yes,
the 140
Honor.
Briefly.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is your primary argument that the reason that the plasmid must be construed as circular because that's what Stinsky describes for his plasmids?
Our argument is that that the way that the word plasmid was used at the time... Let me just take a step back because it's an important question. When I read the appellant's briefs, I get the impression that they think the standard that Your Honor should be using on this is whether there's been some disavowal of claim scope or whether we limited ourselves or the patentee limited itself in some way.
But it is correct, is it not, that linear plasmids were known so that there would have been necessarily, even though Stinsky said this describes it as circular.
I would say slight disagreement there, Your Honor. I think that people would talk about doing things with plasmids. So you have a plasmid, you linearize the plasmid, you integrate the plasmid. That does not mean that a plasmid, a definition of a plasmid, is linear and integrated. That is simply some extrinsic evidence that they cited in their papers, by the way, most of which was not before the district court at all. For example, the Folger reference, not cited as part of claim construction. The declaration that they rely on, not cited as part of claim construction.
So you're saying that every linear plasmid starts as circular and then is somehow converted to linear?
I'm saying that when people talked about recombinant DNA plasmids during this time frame, and we've cited Federal Circuit opinions, we have also cited, in addition to the intrinsic evidence, we've cited also famous textbooks from the time that provide definitional language, Your Honor.
Is the answer yes? You're saying that every linear plasmid was once circular?
I'm saying that the recombinant DNA plasmid was understood to be circular and extra chromosomal. I am saying, Your Honor, that you can search and find people talking about doing things with plasmids. By, for example, taking a plasmid and linearizing it, taking a plasmid and integrating it. That doesn't mean the definition of a recombinant DNA plasmid must include linear, must include...
Doesn't mean the opposite either. That's why I appreciate what Stinsky says.
Right.
And I'm trying to understand whether, in fact, this is the appropriate generalized interpretation when you have as broad a disclosure as in the 140 specification.
So, for example, Your Honor, I would submit that extra chromosomal and circular is the generalized meaning of plasmid within that time frame. For example, Your Honor, outside of the intrinsic evidence, stepping out of that.
I want to know if we have to agree with you on that point in order to support the 140 decision.
I would agree with that as well, Your Honor, because here you've got...
There's a question, not an answer.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I missed it then.
I want to be as clear as is reasonably feasible as to how your case on the 140 depends on whether or not plasmid must be construed as circular at the phase in which it's used here.
Our position, Your Honor, is that the recombinant DNA plasmid, the ordinary meaning of that, is a extrachromosomal circular structure. It's not integrated. That's what a plasmid is. And the intrinsic evidence uniformly shows that, Your Honor. The extrinsic evidence that we cited, expert testimony.
In other words, the answer to the question is yes.
Yes, Your Honor. I apologize, Your Honor.
Okay, I think, any more questions for Mr. Verhoeven? Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Solander.
Just a few points, Your Honor. The answer to the question that he asked is indeed yes, that you asked is indeed yes. Their case does depend on it being limited to a circular and extra chromosomal molecule, but ours is not. If it is so limited, we still believe that we are entitled to argue the doctrine of equivalence on that case, on that basis, and that it is not a vitiation of claim scope to say that a linear and chromosomal integrated molecule is the same as a extra chromosomal and circular molecule in the context of this particular invention. And, Your Honor, I want to point to some intrinsic evidence that I think does shed some light on the question of the plasmid, and that is claim 43. 43 is to a cell that has been transformed with a plasmid. And the most common meaning of transformed, and there's evidence in the record for this, the most common meaning is that the plasmid has been integrated and is linear in the chromosome of the cell. That's called a stably transformed cell. There's also a definition, it's sometimes used, that a transformed cell can be what we call transiently transfected, where the molecule remains for some period of time as a circular extra chromosomal molecule. I would submit, Your Honor, if you find, or if the court's conclusion that that plasmid is limited to circular and extra chromosomal shapes excludes the most common meaning of transformed in claim 43, and thus is improper for that reason on that basis. Turning just briefly to the Stinsky reference that Mr. Verhoeven read to you, microbial cell in that instance is bacterial cell. And it's also true of all the dictionary definitions and other references that were cited, that they were all bacterial cells. Our position is that in eukaryotic expression systems, the definition of plasmid also includes linear and integrated plasmids. A plasmid is essentially a molecule that is constructed to serve some purpose. In this instance, it's to do protein synthesis. And the question of its shape is dependent upon perhaps what type of cell it is. Although typically in bacterial cells, they're circular and extra chromosomal. That isn't always the case. And the references we cited showed that by 1983, plasmids were referred to as integrated and chromosomal, and they were still called plasmids. That's the point, Your Honor. On the question of inserting, Your Honor, we also have an argument that even if it is found to be that it must cross the cell membrane to literally infringe, that we have an argument on the doctrine of equivalence. We believe that there is no claim vitiation in this particular instance because there is an inserting step in the mitosis where the foreign DNA is put or introduced into the daughter cell, that the jury can consider whether or not that is equivalent to the act of inserting across a cell membrane. And your last point, Your Honor, the translation start site that Mr. Verhoeven referred to as not being included within the patent was well known in the art. You'll find a reference to that at A222, that is the Stenberg reference. The translation site for start site was known. There was no reason to put it in the patent. But the most important evidence, I think, as to what upstream region means, it's not the transcription start site, because that's the language that was used in claim 2. If the applicants had meant transcription start site, they would have used it in claim 1. They used different language. They said upstream region of the gene, which in our view means the start of translation. And one piece of evidence consistent with that is the fact that the example shows the entirety of the PST1M fragment, which ends far downstream of the transcription start site and at the just upstream of the translation start site.
Any more questions?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Solander and Mr. Verhoeven. The case is taken under submission.
Thank you, Your Honor.